Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So, you know those little boxes on websites that list most popular articles on the site? Well, go to LoHud.com, the website for the Journal News. And today, for the first time in 2 weeks, the most popular story is not the map of gun permits in Westchester and Rockland counties that the paper published on December 22nd. But that in no way indicates that the firestorm over the map has died down. Let's talk about the decision and the backlash with Ken Paulson, president of the First Amendment Center, a collaboration between the museum and Vanderbilt University. He's former editor of USA Today and 20-some years ago was editor of the Journal News. Ken, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
Good to be with you.
First, let's square the legal side of this question. I suspect as president of the First Amendment Center, you think that this kind of information should be accessible and legal to print?
Well, there's no question that it is accessible. And in fact, the New York State Legislature said this is a public record. And that's an important public policy decision. You don't put things in the public record unless you want people to access them and see some societal benefit to them accessing it. And so this really becomes an editorial decision. Does the newspaper believe it's valuable and relevant and something they want to share? Because obviously, under the First Amendment, they really can't be stopped. They have every right to publish the information.
And the calls are coming in already. Just put the number out there so everybody's on an equal footing, able to get in, along with people who already have us on our speed dial. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can post on the Journal News gun map to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And, yeah, you brought up state law. And I think that's one of the interesting and lesser discussed aspects of this so far. And that is apparently, according to the Journal News' own article that accompanied the map, there was a legislative debate in Albany when they passed certain gun laws that wound up including the fact that the names and addresses of gun permit holders would be public record, but the types of weapons that they own would not be. And so it seems like the legislature at some point in the past made a decision to protect the privacy of the gun holders in terms of what types of guns, I'm not sure why that, but not the privacy of their identities or their addresses. How do you understand that?
Well, it does sound like a compromise somewhere in there. But the important thing, I think, in that equation is that there was actual serious discussion about whether the identification of a permit holder by name and by address, the dissemination of that was in the public interest. I mean, legislatures shouldn't reach that conclusion lightly. And so it's not as though the Journal News did this, sort of on a whim. They were renegades. No, it was out there in the public record, has been in the public record for quite some time. And we certainly can talk about how they executed it and how they did it and what the reaction has been. But I think everyone has been stunned, both at the paper but also in the broader media community, at this firestorm because, frankly, it's not the first newspaper to do it. There have been websites in New York that have run the same information based on the same law, and the Journal News did it in 2006. There's something about the dynamics today that led to this firestorm that has not happened before.
Is it just the fact that it happened so close to Sandy Hook or some other reason?
Well, you know, you'd have to assume that the extraordinary tragedy in Connecticut, has people's emotions just stirred up in a dramatic way. But the other is the whole debate about gun control is at a fever pitch right now. And of course, the biggest difference is 2006, you didn't have Twitter. And although there are many in the Journal News community who are questioning what the Journal News did, and frankly, I see reasons why people would be disturbed or unsettled. Frankly, most of the criticism is coming, 95% of it's coming from the world beyond, because you write something in the Journal News in 1990 and the good people of Rockland County and Putnam County and Westchester see it, but you do it in 2013 or 2012 in this case, the entire world sees it. So the backlash is that much more intense.
Well, as a former editor of the Journal News, you must have asked yourself, how would you have reacted had one of your reporters come to you last month with this idea? How do you think?
Well, I do want to emphasize, when you introduced me, you said some 20 years ago. And so I want to be very clear that, A, I'm not second-guessing my colleagues and friends at that newspaper. And B, much has changed in two decades of journalism, including they tore down the building in which I once worked. So I'm not by any means suggesting I want to supplant their judgment in this. Let me just tell you, generally, I think the key, and I face the USA Today and every other newspaper I run, the key to running potentially controversial content is to provide context, recognizing that some percentage of your readership is going to react negatively. You'd better be very clear about why you're doing it, what the relevance of it is, and why it benefits the community to publish what may be volatile information. And I think that has been the question raised about the Journal News. Did they give enough context? The other key question here, and it's a fair question, is do you need to publish the exact name and address of each permit holder, or is there a way to hedge a little bit and have the same insight about the proliferation of guns in your communities? And I'm somewhat sympathetic to those who have been startled by seeing their name in the paper, because you think about it. If you live your life the right way, most people, 95% of them, their name shows up in the newspaper at birth, at marriage, and at death. And if you come across it one Sunday when you don't expect it, you are going to be startled. Now, it doesn't say the Journal News was wrong to publish it, but I am saying there was a reason for an emotional reaction to it.
Right. Well, when you talk about context, some of the criticism of media watchers is that the Journal News did not do a very good job of reporting around the map. The argument is that, yes, information wants to be free. This is all a matter of public record. But it's not enough to just free the information. The job of a reporter is to provide some context and more analysis than they did. Otherwise, it looks like they're trying to do public shaming of law-abiding gun owners just because they own guns.
Yeah, I've heard that criticism, and I understand where it's coming from. But I also would have to tell you that I think it's a good policy for news organizations generally to make public records as available as possible. I mean, can you imagine a scenario in which the Journal News figured out how to actually have a pipeline of public records from Rockland, Putnam, and Westchester counties and have it all go from the county clerk's offices right into a site at the Journal News available on the web? I mean, wouldn't we all applaud that? Wouldn't we all say, isn't that great? I don't have to go down to the courthouse, even though there's going to be some stuff in those records, public employee salaries, for example, that some people won't want to have out there. And so I guess, reflexively, I'm going to tend to be protective of a free press anyway. But I also think, context is critically important. I agree with that. I also agree that if they had done more context, if they'd provided more information, if they had done more analysis, there would not be this kind of firestorm. Having said that, it's really tough to condemn a news organization for publishing information that is on the public record that the state legislature intended to be on the public record. Could they have done a better, more detailed job? Sure. But I keep coming away with a sense of, boy, they're getting hit hard for this. You know, information that historically has been in the public interest to disseminate. It's just they're paying a much greater price than I ever would have imagined.
Well, what is the public interest? Because just because you have a right to do something doesn't mean it's good judgment to do something. So what is the public interest, in your opinion, or how is the public interest served in publishing the actual names and actual home addresses of individuals with gun permits?
Well, in my view, the best path in this kind of a story would be to report it block by block and avoid the specificity because of the point you're making. But I also am respectful of each news organization's responsibility to do it the way they think they need to do it for their community. So, again, I'm trying not to second guess here. Mm-hmm. I do know that in Memphis, Tennessee, they did a similar report that showed that people who shouldn't have guns, people by law who were prevented from having guns. Felons had guns, and they got that by publishing very specific information drawn from a public database. You know, that's highly defensible. We've seen a report from the Washington Post showing that where guns were bought, they were brought into the district and led to crimes. So it's not the data that is a problem, and it's not the public dissemination of the data that's the problem. I think in almost every case, it's the presentation of the information and making sure that readers understand why sharing it in this manner is appropriate, defensible, and in the public interest.
We're talking about the Journal News publication of the Gun Permit Holder's Map for Westchester and Rockland with Ken Paulson, a former editor a long time ago of the Journal News, former editor of USA Today, now president of the journalism think tank, the First Amendment Center. And let's get some of our callers from various sides of this on the air. And we'll start with Ken in the Bronx. Ken, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. What I'm about to say is joking, but I am a 280-pound man, and I'm considering moving to Westchester to become a criminal, because I know exactly which houses don't have guns.
Don't have guns. Ken, thank you. And John in Englewood calling with another common hypothetical, at least. John, hi.
Hi. Mine is exactly the opposite. It alerts criminals to where guns are so that they can steal them from those homes.
Thank you very much. So, Ken, these are the most common two calls that we've gotten in our previous segments on this. And you know, on the critical side, criminals know where they can go to steal guns. I tend to think that that's the less strong argument because it's so easy to get guns on the black market without taking the risk of a home invasion. And people will know, well, there aren't guns, so if they want to burglarize the home, they'll know where there's less risk of being shot by a homeowner in self-defense.
Yeah, I've heard those two arguments, and neither of us knows what the truth is. I personally, like you, think that if somebody was casing a joint and they knew that somebody had a gun, you know, they would think twice about that. I have not heard as much of the latter, and you would think people would say, you know, now you've told the world that I'm defenseless without a gun. You know, there's no studies of this. No one can tell how the criminal mind works. Everybody I've talked to in law enforcement says most crime is opportunism. They see a house that's empty or appears to be empty, or newspapers are piling up outside. It's just the notion that there are criminals accessing the Journal News website to plan their crimes feels like a stretch to me. But having said that, you know, as an editor of a newspaper, if you're a publisher of a newspaper, if your reader is going to react that way, you just kind of have to anticipate that and explain why the publication of this information is so valuable. And that's, I think we go back to the core point here is if they just said the 2200 block of Main Street as opposed to specific name and address, we wouldn't have this issue at all.
In defense of the newspaper, Dan in White Plains. Dan, you're on the air.
Good morning, Brian. I like your guest. My comment is that some years ago, something similar like this with somewhat of a very important social purpose was published by a pro-gun group that was not the NRA. I would think it was the Second Amendment Foundation or National Sportsman's Foundation, something like that, about celebrities, movie stars, and wealthy people in New York City who have concealed carry permits. And the impact of that article, which was mentioned in the New York Times about 5 or 6 years ago, was to really focus on the duplicitous nature of Bloomberg's gun control laws. In other words, they were really focused on poor people of color in inner city neighborhoods, while rich people, and if you could, there was no map, but it was a list of names, and most of them were celebrities, known people like Trump, like Robert De Niro, and the list goes on. And it had effect outside of New York, in many places outside of New York.
So is this an argument that the newspaper did the right thing, or did I misunderstand originally?
I believe they did the right thing.
Because?
Because it shows the map of the people who own guns. It didn't have a very important impact because these are licensed owners. Mm-hmm. Most of these people do not carry guns. They just own guns.
Right.
And it was just, you know, a little of embarrassment, but a little to indicate how gun ownership is prevalent in this area of the country.
Dan, thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there and get one more on Felice in Tarrytown. Hi, Felice. Good. Are you on a speakerphone?
I am on a speakerphone.
Can you pick up your handset?
Yes, I can.
Just because I want everybody to hear you really, really, really well. Go ahead.
One second.
Or maybe it's
okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Real quick.
I just wanted to say that, first of all, I'm fine that they published it. Lots of my personal information is available online, the assessed value of my house and so forth. I have an unpleasant neighbor, and I looked up to see if he had a gun, just in case. I was happy that I could find that information. And third, I would say that the reaction to this is a perfect demonstration of why we need this information to be publicly available. A lot of these people who are making threats, who are acting in a threatening way towards journal reporters, they could be gun owners. What does that say?
Felice, thank you. You know, that's an interesting argument that I actually haven't heard before, Ken, although it makes a lot of sense as an argument on the pro side, which is that the target here is not the average law-abiding Joe and Jane who has a gun permit and now their neighbors know who they are, but the target here is if somebody seems like somebody who is starting to go off in whatever way and you know they have a gun permit. Well, I don't know. Maybe that leads to discrimination against people who don't deserve to be discriminated against, or maybe it leads to a certain wariness, which is why it's a matter of public record in the first place.
Well, I agree that if you had a cranky neighbor down the street who seemed kind of menacing or strange, you might want to check to see if they were armed. But, you know, that really overstates the value of this database. If you look at it, it's very simple. I did a piece for CBS Evening News the other day, and they had interviews with a couple of people who said they're law enforcement. One guy said he was law enforcement and put some people away, and now they could find him. But, you know, in order to find somebody, you would have to actually just click on all those dots on that screen on that map. I mean, it's not that interactive. You can't search for a guy's name. And so in a lot of ways, this is, I think, what the paper intended to do was show the proliferation of guns, how many there are out there. But if they really wanted to do something in which you could identify the guy next door, they would have made it easier for you.
And I think that's the power of the map. I think you just touched on it, is that it shows the incredible density of gun ownership in Rockland and Westchester, which are probably not atypical of the United States. If anything, New York is probably less gun saturated than other places. But the power of the map, oddly enough, is in the aggregate, even though all the attention is focused on the individual.
Although if you look at it, you go, really? There's just one gun in Ridgefield? clearly something's wrong here.
I guess it's town by town. Well, we have to leave it there, except that the legal dispute, it may just be beginning, may just be starting, because neighboring Putnam County is now refusing to release similar information. Mayor Bloomberg said the city had a similar Freedom of Information Act request from a news organization some years ago, and they said no. So maybe the extent to which the state legislature did force this to be a matter of public record is something that's just starting to be litigated.
And we'll see that all over America. That's in part why the First Amendment Center has an interest in this. We do believe that legislatures across this country are going to try to tighten access to public records. And, you know, I do understand some of the concerns of the gun owners, especially those who are surprised by the information. But you know, you begin to tell legislatures to rewrite the public records law, and you're open a Pandora's box. So we are concerned about that and would hope that everything intended for the public record stays there.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation, which many people have already started to continue, on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show, and we thank Ken Paulson, former editor of the Journal News, former editor of USA Today, now president of the First Amendment Center, a journalism think tank and collaboration between the Newseum and Vanderbilt University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC, and coming up next, cognitive psychologist Maria Konnikova, author of Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes.